Shalom everyone, and today we're studying for Rosh Hashanah the real secret behind Rosh Hashanah, the Hebrew no gear, and the sources in all Jewish writings, either the Zohar or the Talmud and other places. Everybody speaks about it on Rosh Hashanah. This is where every human soul is being judged, and whatever is concerned with who's to live, who's to die, who by fire, who by sword, all of that is coming from the Rosh Hashanah text. So the question is that everybody's asking, here we are in front of the Hebrew year 5783, what kind of a year are we going to have? How are we going to be going through the year? What kind of a year we're going to, what quality, our family, our sustenance, our careers, everything is at stake on Rosh Hashanah. So the question is that everybody is kind of either excited, most people are kind of fearsome, worried, but we have to remember, we are in a special time of the history of humanity. And I hope you're starting to feel that. The year is 5783. It's 5783 since the project of humanity, we're going to talk about it soon, the project of humanity has started. What happened before 5783? It's none of our business. There was an evolution and so on and so on. But there was no one there to count the time. So we cannot, by the Jewish rules, which by the way fits quantum physics, if there's no one to count the time, was there really time? And I don't want to go into it, but if you learn quantum physics or the law of uncertainty, the uncertainty principle, you realize there's a problem with that. Humans can measure, count, record time only around 6,000 years. How do we know? We don't have any documentation before 6,000 years. So that's how the Torah is dealing with this issue. The process, the project of humanity supposed to last for 6,000 years, and we are in year 5783, which means we are really, really close to the end of the project. And therefore, do you know what happens when your deadline is coming near? It's like everything is becoming much accelerated, lots of pressure, and a lot of mix-up or focus. And you know what? Some people, they really function next to the deadline. They really produce next to the deadline, and you see how humanity is going through processes of transformation in the last century that are so intense that in few decades you can see a change that we did not see for thousands of years. So in order to understand what we're going through, we have to understand we are, as humanity, we are going through very intense times, and things are going to get even more intense because we're coming to the end of this current project. Oh, there are other projects afterwards, but we have first to complete the first project, and we'll understand that better when we read the next coming text. So first of all, Rosh Hashanah has really a great message because we can ask the question, why do we need a New Year's celebration? You know, New Year's celebration is something that you can find in many, many cultures and civilizations. But the Jewish way to celebrate the New Year is different than all others. Yes, when in the West you celebrate January 1st, a lot of people talk about New Year's resolutions and stuff like this, but basically, you don't really believe the New Year's resolutions on January 1st are going to make a big difference for the rest of the year. Okay, it's nice to have New Year's resolution, but the Jewish aspect of the New Year is much more serious because you talk about it, you speak about it, you mention it in the prayers, in the family holiday dinners. There's so many traditions that brings you back into that idea. Right now, our destiny is being determined, and we have the ability to somehow interact with the universe, with the judgment, and improve the judgment so it depends on us. One of the most famous prayers for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is a very ancient prayer, poem, but it's being recited in many synagogues, and it says, "Berosh Hashanah ikatevun uviyom tzom Kippur ichatemun." On the day of Rosh Hashanah, they will be written, and on Yom Kippur, they will be signed. Who's to live? Who's to die? Who by fire? Who by sword? Who by famine? And so on and so forth. So, if you know Leonard Cohen's songs, "Who by Fire," he took it from that prayer, which means right now we are standing in front of heavenly court on Rosh Hashanah, and our destiny is being ruled. However, the poem goes on, the piyut, the prayer, the ancient prayer goes on forward, and it says, "Utshuva utfila utzdaka ma'avirin et roa hagzera." However, prayer, after everything is being determined for every human being, a prayer, repentance, we'll talk about it, it's not exactly repentance, but it's something like similar to it, and charity can remove the decree, which means who does that depend on? On us. And then the prayer goes on, and God says, "Ki lo echpots bemot hamet ki imshav midarko v'chaya." And God says, I do not want the dead person to die. I want him to return and come back from his wrong way and live. Which means, it says really clearly, it's not God who's making the decision for somebody to die. It depends on our actions. How can we understand that, and how can we use that in order to improve our faith in the coming year? So, we first have to understand that the biblical year is starting as the astrological year starts in the spring. The biblical year is starting around March 21st, like the astrological calendar in many, many civilizations, okay? And therefore, the celebration of the Passover holiday needs to happen on a full moon after March 21st, never before, because that is the spring. So if we go to the biblical calendar, it says that we celebrate Rosh Hashanah on the first day of the seventh month. How does that sound like? Pretty weird, right? And how do we explain that? And the answer is that when we speak about the new year, we're not talking about the astrological year, because astrological year, from the Zohar point of view, of course it does start in the spring. And the energy of life for every creature starting, like the word spring, it springs, it comes out on from above on the spring. Okay, however, when we understand a little bit of Kabbalistic symbolism, we understand that the seventh is coming from the vessel point of view, which means the world is built. If you really want to understand the structure of this universe and how does this universe function, there is a duality. And duality, this duality starts already in the beginning. Genesis chapter 1. And in the beginning, God created the heaven, the heavens and the earth. And it ends, and there was a night, there was a day, one day. There's a duality, night and day, heaven and earth, the creator and the creation. We have to understand, because that's a very important aspect of our reality if we want to understand reality. Because if you don't understand reality, if you don't understand the rules of the universe, how can you function? It's like, can you imagine driving? Let's say your father taught you to drive in your backyard. You have a big backyard, huge. So you learn how to drive over there, but you never learned the rules of driving anywhere outside, you know, in public. And then you drive and you don't understand what is a stop sign and what is a go sign. You don't understand slow down. You don't understand what's a highway, what does it mean to drive next to a school? You don't understand the signs on the road. Sooner or later, there's going to be a big problem, right? If you do not know the rules. Same thing. This universe, our universe has rules. If you don't understand the rules, don't be surprised that your life looks like a mess or a serial accident, because you have to learn how to see and read the signs. Learning Kabbalah is basically learning how to read the signs. So when you see the seventh month, number seven usually symbolizes the receiving aspect of the creation, which means you have the creator, which is the giver of life. And if we understand monotheism, monotheism speaks about a creator that is endless, that is not limited, that is the source of life. And because he's endless, his giving is never limited, which means the flow of abundance and bliss from the creator is always endless, infinite. It can never change, never. Which means the creator gives his bliss to the mean guys, to the bad guys, to the good guys, to the smart guys, to the not so smart guys, the same. Okay? The same way we see the polarity between the sun and the moon. The sun is shining to everyone the same, without any prejudice. However, we, the creation, not the creator, we are like the moon. We receive the light. We don't have any light of our own. And light means all that is good. And how much do we have depends how much do we project, how much do we reflect. That's the moon. And the moon has cycles, ups and downs. And we humans and humanity, we have ups and downs. And how do you measure somebody's light? How much of God's light can that person reflect and project? Number seven is the number for the creation, the female aspect. The giver, like the sun, is the male aspect. That's a creator. The female is the recipient aspect. So the moment when we speak about the first day of the seventh month, this is Rosh Hashanah. By the way, in Hebrew, Rosh Hashanah does not mean the new year. Rosh Hashanah means the head of the year. The head, the word head is very simply understood. When you speak about the head of the company, the head of the household, the head of the government, the head of the whatever, any system, you mean control. This is the point of control. So when you say the head of the year, Rosh Hashanah means the head of the year. The head of the year means the point of control of over the year, which means it doesn't say the new year, okay? Although we speak about a new year coming in and so on, but that's not the terminology. It's not that precise. It is the head of the year, which means what controls the flow of bliss, good fortune, happiness, health, and whatever is good in our lives, is that being controlled by the Creator? No. Why? Because the Creator's sharing and giving is unconditional and unlimited. So, who limits the flow of bliss and abundance in our lives? And if we think about it, if we contemplate about it, we know it is totally dependent in our consciousness. The more spiritual you become, the more wise you become, the more you learn about reality, the more you understand how what you go through is a result of what you think, of what you know, of the scope of your awareness, which is your biggest and most important resource. So, therefore, we know, research is showing us, that's already like, this is more than science, it's not prejudice, that optimistic people live longer, make more money, they're happier, they're less sick, and they are 5 times more successful in business ventures than pessimistic people. Pessimistic people, they live less, they are more sick, they make less money, maybe they're more realistic, but they gain less, which means you have the choice to be optimistic or pessimistic, which means your state of mind determines what kind of a life you're going to experience. So though we are being taught many times, depends on the civilization, the culture that we were raised at, we were told that, you know, there are things we have no control over. When we come to Rosh Hashanah, we understand it's all our control. Rosh Hashanah is the control point. It's the panel of control of what kind of a destiny every human being is going to experience. And first of all, it has to come with the awareness that if we have more positive thinking, more broader thinking, we can achieve much more in our everyday life, which means you can see people being raised in the same system. However, some people have a broader consciousness and more positive, and you'll see they're more lucky. It's not lucky. It's like cause and effect. Consciousness creates a better destiny, which means a broader mind, broader understanding. With that, you can deal with reality with better tools, and you can control it. And therefore, we have to understand that the control of our destiny is the focal point for it is on Rosh Hashanah. Why? How can we explain it? So, we'll go right now to the teachings of one of the greatest Kabbalists ever, Rabbi Moshe Chaim Luzzatto. He lived most of his life in Italy in the 18th century. Later on, his community did not like his broad-minded thinking, and he moved from Italy to Amsterdam, to the Jewish community over there that was in a way broader than that. He published some of the most famous books ever written in Jewish spirituality. And then he moved to Israel in the last days of his life, and that's where he finished his life. Now, let's read those words that explain the ground rules of what the creation is about and what Rosh Hashanah is about. That will give us an amazing background. So he speaks about the creation. And in the creation, we understand that God's sharing is endless, and therefore he created us, and that's one of the most basic pillars of the teachings of Rabbi Moshe Chaim Luzzatto. If God is all good and is the source of whatever is good and all what light is about and bliss is about, he created us, humanity, human souls, as a vessel for his pleasure and bliss. So what is the most important aspect of us humans that can be completed by the teachings of Rabbi Yehuda Ashlag? We're talking about the 20th century, but he simply completed the teachings of the Ramchal, Rabbi Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, and he said the definition of a human soul is the desire to receive God's bliss, energy, light, whatever you name it. Okay, now, since God created us in his image, and we're not talking about the physical image, so the only image we have is a mental image. A mental image of a creator means that nobody tells you what to do. You are totally independent. Okay, which means if your well-being is dependent on God or anybody else, you can never be really happy. And also, God is creative. If you are just sitting there doing nothing, you can never really connect to your real essence. And the same thing about sharing. And therefore, human beings, by the real, original, true nature of their soul, cannot enjoy free gifts. As people say, no free lunches. Easy comes, easy goes. We say that, but this is basically mirroring a very, very important, deep truth that defines the human true soul. So we continue these words of the Ramchal. And here we say, we read in that reading, which is in his book, Da'at Vunot, one of the other famous book, Sefer HaKlalim, in Da'at Vunot, the book of rules, rule number 28. And he says as follows, Birtzot HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shetiyeh Avodah Bivnei Adam. So because we were created in his image and we cannot receive free gifts, okay? Therefore, we were given a space for creating our own pleasure, our own happiness. Okay, and how do we do that? Shema she'eno bidei shamayim. So we need to have a space so we can create on our own our independence and whatever belongs to our happiness. We have to have that space that we can create it by ourselves. In order for us to be able to have that space, we needed a space in which we have free will. So we can choose how to act and how to have free will. How does that being achieved? And that can be achieved. There is a process that the Kabbalists, when the Kabbalists explain the process of evolution that happened before the Big Bang, before what scientists call the Big Bang, which is the birth of the physical universe, there were many, many more evolutionary stages, according to the Kabbalistic books, that started from the question, how do we create from an endless being of light and positivity, which is the creator himself, how did a being of lack and need was created? How did the human soul have been created? It could not happen something out of nothing, ex nihilo, without a process. Because he cannot have darkness coming out of light just, you know, One, two, three. It has to happen through an evolutionary process. That evolutionary process is a very long process described in the books of the Kabbalists, but one very crucial aspect of it is called the Nesira, which means it can be reflected in the story of the creation that in the beginning, when Adam was being created, read chapter 1 in Genesis, and it says, "Betzalmu betzalem Elokim bara oto," and God created Adam in his image, in the image of God. And then the verse continues, "Zachar u'nekeva bara otam," male and female, he created them. Which means, already in chapter 1 in Genesis, Adam and Eve are already there, but they are two in one, male and female, in one entity that is called Adam. Which means, one of the biggest myths is that Eve was created from Adam's rib. That's a big misunderstanding of Hebrew. The word tzela could be translated into a rib, but usually in the biblical description, the biblical text, it's being used as a side. Also in this case, why? Because if Adam was created in the image of God, male and female, he created them, they were male and female in one creation. Why? In the process of evolution of the creation of human souls, that was a necessary step. And in the beginning, we were created as the feature of heaven, as a unity. However, when you have automatic unity, you have no free will, which means when everything is in harmony and one, what kind of free will do you have? How can you choose between darkness and light when the unity is embedded and without any option? So therefore, we need chapter 2 in Genesis. And in chapter 2 in Genesis, it says that God put Adam into sleep, tardema. Okay, tardema, that's Hebrew. In Aramaic, dormita. In Latin, dormir, dorment, and so on. And that's a source of the word sleep in many languages coming out of Latin. Okay, that dormita, what is sleep? That the soul divides and separates from the body. Here we're talking about separating between the male and the female. Okay? This process is called nesira. Nesira, it's in English, sawing. Like you saw, what's the difference between cutting and sawing? Sawing takes process. That process of sawing also needed an evolution of at least 10 steps. These are the first 10 days of the Hebrew year, from Rosh Hashanah till Yom Kippur, 10 days. Every day is another step of the Nesira. Why do you need to sow them? Because you need to separate between Adam and Eve, the giving and the receiving, the two aspects of human nature. And as you sow them, you build them as two independent entities. Especially, you build Eve, the female, as an independent vessel that has the choice to be reactive or proactive, to be withdrawn or to take responsibility. That is the most important part of the creation. וזה מה שנותן בשורש התחתונים כוח בלתי מצטרך אל ההערה העליונה. And that separation that builds a human body and consciousness that, you know, you think that I can without God, you know? No creature can live a split second without God's light. Okay, it's like you're saying, you see this light bulb? It can shine without electricity. How could that be possible? Because it, no, because the light bulb thinks that it creates the electricity, the energy by its own. It does. It's not aware that it has to be hooked on to the grid. Okay, the ability to think like this has been created by that nesira, that separation between the, what the story is calling separating between Adam and Eve, one side and the other side. So, elamutba ba'atzmam shelo yifalu bekoach mukhach, which means the moment you have a consciousness that you are a creation of your own, and you're not dependent on God's light, you are not forced to behave by the rules. You have the ability to choose to do that. And that's where free will stems from. Now, a tree cannot choose to go by the rules of the creator and the creation. Therefore, a tree, an insect, any animal, any part of the whole universe, galaxies or little tiny bugs, all of them serves the purpose of the creation without any questioning. They simply do by instinct what they are programmed to do. Therefore, you cannot praise them for that because they don't have any other option. They are robots. They are it's automatic. Humans here in that process of the Nesira were separated from the Creator in a way that they can think they can live on their own. They can deny the existence of the Creator, and you know what? And they're still alive. Okay? It's like, and you have another great sage, the Ramak, Rabbi Moshe Cordovier, in his book Tomer Dvorah, The Palm of Deborah, he says, you know, people are can be blasphemous. They can speak against God. With whose energy they do that? With his energy. And what about God? He can say, you know what? You want to curse me? Use somebody else's power to do that. I cut it off. He does not. We learn from God about patience and tolerance from that. They see somebody going totally against God with hatred, with venom. And with whose energy is doing that? With God's energy. When we transform that animosity, venom, hatred, denial, okay, into really being God's representatives on earth and really achieving a connection to godliness on our own, this, v'hiya notenet lahim shevach umala, this is the source of any praise or any value or achievement. It's not achievement in sports or in money that gives us fulfillment. The real fulfillment is our closeness to the light of God, and that needs to be achieved against the odds, against our nature, our thinking. Since we're kids, we're born, that we can do it on. So when we turn ourselves into God's light, which means becoming the vessels, awareness that we are just vessels of God's light, we have to choose that. We have to choose to make God our King. And when we choose that, ונמצאים שותפים עמו יתברך, then we align with him, to partner with him, to establish his universe, and to continue fulfilling the purpose of the creation. And by this we partner with God in making his world complete and beautiful, because it's like in this world he created, he needs us to participate in the completion of his creation. That's how he created this universe. Flawed, so we can complete it. Okay? So, we are born as humans with a mission to complete the creation. How? First condition is to be aware of the fact that we have free will, and we have to use that free will to follow the king of the universe as out of choice. And that's why one of the major words of Rosh Hashanah prayers is Hamelech, the king. And part of the Rosh Hashanah prayers, one of the focal points, you can see it in a verse that basically mirrors or concentrates the whole meaning of Rosh Hashanah prayers and the meditation of Rosh Hashanah. Ve'yada, what we are praying for on Rosh Hashanah, ve'yada kol pa'ul ki ata pe'alto, and every creature, it's like you don't have enough words in English for that, but every creature is being basically created by God. But in the lower level, it's called Pa'ul. Who makes us move? Who makes us go? Who created what is called reality and destiny and whatever movies that we play in? That's God. So that's called Pa'ul. Pa'ul is somebody that is a subject to the creation. And every subject of the creation, we will know that you are the one who activates him. Ve'yavin kol yetzur ki ata yetzarto, and every creature will know that you created him. Ve'yomar kol asher neshama ba'apo, and everyone who has a soul in his nostrils will say, Adonai Elohei Israel Melech, God the Lord of Israel is the king. Umalchuto b'kol mashala, and he reigns everywhere, in everything. Which means, what is the purpose of the creation? This is the purpose of the creation. That every creature, and we're talking about humans, because as we said, the others, they don't need to choose God. They simply connect to him and they follow his orders. It's humans that were created with the option to choose that. What is the purpose of the creation? That each human being, we will know that he's being operated by God. He will understand that he was created by God, and he will say, I know that God is the king, and his kingdom is ruling everywhere. When we come to that place, only then we can see real, true peace on earth. We know that humans are very weak. Humans have flaws. We have the dark side of greed, hatred, revenge, anger, sadness, self-pity, victimization. We know that. That's what we are. That's our name, a second name. Okay, however, all of that darkness was created so we can choose actively who's operating us, the king of the universe or our urges, our lust, our fears, our negativities, our flaws. Who will operate the system? That's our choice. We have no other choice. The moment we choose the king, we choose God as the king, then, only then, whoever knows the 12 steps program, the AA, it's like if you want to overcome your addictions, you must acknowledge the power of this, of the higher power in your life. Because if you're not getting that power and you don't activate it with your consciousness, with your approval and exception, You have no way and any chance to win in the fight against your flaws. We were created that way, so we can become God's partners by choice. This is the story. So, when you look around, it's 2022 or 5783 in a few days. We see how the world is falling apart because at the moment you get God out of the picture, government, school, family, public domain, the moment you kick God out of it, that means that you kick God out of people's consciousness. More and more people grow up agnostics, or like, maybe there is a God, but there is nothing to do between God or that higher power in our lives, everyday life. The moment you do that, you basically become independent. You think you become independent, but you're not. What you become black holes. Because you have no way anymore to achieve control over your flaws as a human being. And if that is the case, you become, if you look around, we in the last few decades, we became a society of addicts. We're addicted, we're being raised to be addicted to sugar, to be addicted to easy and fast gratification. And that means shopping, that means the way we behave, that means that we are becoming addicted to drugs, against pain, against everything, because we need it easy and now. And we need satisfaction easy and now without any ability to control that. That's how kids are being raised today. It's good for business. Because we become, if ever anybody saw the movie The Matrix, we become the material of huge corporations and governments that basically play with us, because the moment our addictions are controlling us, we have no power whatsoever to control anything in our lives. Really, we don't have any power. We are being played, we're being subjugated, and the world is going back to the old slavery system, but we don't realize that. We don't realize that. We owe the banks, the government, we owe here. We just serve a purpose, we just meet. The moment you push God out of the picture, you become a prey to every predator around. If it is a party, a political power, if it is a commercial power, and it doesn't matter. They're all working together to prey on us. You have no control anymore over your destiny, over your life. And this is why the world is starting to shake. You can't predict anymore. You become fearful, stressful. Why? Because you have no idea. Once upon a time, maybe in the 50s and the 60s, we're being fed with that thing. If you know, just obey, and you just work hard, you get a steady job, you pay your duties, and so on and so forth. You'll build a house, you can send your kids to study a higher education and improve, and every generation it will be better. And everything will be affordable to everyone, education, housing, food, everything. And people are going, and the government is going to serve you, and you're going in return to serve the government. And the government is going to protect your rights, your freedom, your stability, your safety. And you see everywhere around the world, the rules are being broken by day. If you think it's terrible, it's going to be the next day even worse. You can't trust anyone. That is a material for stress, that hatred, that is how the world around us becomes so unsafe. The moment you get God out of the picture. But that's part. part of the growth, that's part of civilization. Because the God that people worshiped before was a God of the Dark Ages. And the God of the Dark Ages was not the God of light and unconditional love. It was the God of wrath, of punishment, punitive, of us and them. You know, only we are close to God and God loves us only. It doesn't matter if you're Jewish, Christian, Muslim, or, you know, that God is, he is on our side. And he will fight them. That's not the story. That God does not exist even. It's a myth. It's again an invention of politics in order to control people. Here we are talking about Rosh Hashanah as the control point for us to get closer to the real true God. That he's just waiting for us to make him our king. And by this, we start to participate in the great game of life, in the great show of all, everything. The show of how do we partner with the Creator to complete His world and make it harmonious, complete, and peaceful again. This is the whole story. So, the story of the creation, therefore, repeats itself every year. And the human soul is basically going through that process all over again. And it takes 22 days. Therefore, when we learn about Jewish tradition, you'll see that reading the five books of Moses is the symbol of the cycle of the year. Okay, we start, we read that in the five books of Moses, there are 53 portions called parashot. And within 1 year, we complete reading all 53 of them. We finish the reading of all 53 portions on the 22nd day of the month of Tishrei, Libra. On that day, we complete reading the book of Deuteronomy, and on the same time, as we finish, a few minutes later, we start reading Genesis. And that is the sign that the new year has commenced. In Hebrew, when you want to say that somebody started all over again, you say, Lehatchil mi Bereshit, starting from Bereshit. When do we start with Bereshit? On the 22nd day of Tishrei, not on the first day of Tishrei. Okay? Why? Because the process of Rosh Hashanah, according to the Kabbalists, takes 22 days. So how does that process happen? It starts with the 10 days of repentance, the 10 days of Teshuvah, which is from Rosh Hashanah till Yom Kippur, exactly 10 days. You look at the Hebrew calendar, always. I think even in American calendars, You can see Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, you see it's always 10 days. That is the first part. This is working on the left column. Remember, when you study Kabbalah, in order for something to work, it needs to have three columns, like a light bulb. The light bulb has a positive pole, negative pole, and a filament, or any kind of a resistor. All these three are a must in order to have an electric device, okay? The human soul must work also on these three column system. The word in English is not so good because in Hebrew the word is kavim, kav, a line. You have a phone line, you know? When was the last time you see the phone line? When did the last time you see somebody using a phone line? Still, the line we are talking about is your line of communication. You have a water line, electrical line. Whenever we use the word line, it means a communication line. So the true meaning is left line, central line, right line. That's the right, that's how you say it in Hebrew, a line of communication. For a vessel to exist, you need the left line. You need the minus. You need the receiving aspect. Without the receiving aspect, you don't exist. And therefore, the first part to be dealt with is the first 10 days, which are we are building through the Nesira process. We're rebuilding our soul, because the whole world goes back to the day of the creation. The creation of the universe, the creation of humanity, the creation of our souls. What does that give us? It gives us a hand, an ability, an opportunity to intervene. If everything is starting, you know, how many times do we say, if I could just go to the beginning and start all over again? That's called in Hebrew, Latchil mi Bereshit, to start from Genesis over. The whole of humanity is being handed a gateway, a wormhole that connects us to the creation, our creation, the creation of humanity, the creation of our souls. What do we build in the beginning? Our vessel, left column. That is the part of us that says, I desire, I want. Without that, you don't exist. How do you know you woke up in the morning? You want something. That's how you were. I want to sleep some more. But you're aware. The moment you're aware, you're asking yourself, what do I want? And that's, what do you do the whole day? What do I want and how do I get it? But first is, what do I want? People with great wants, they make big moves. People with small wants, they make small moves. People with big desires, they work accordingly. You know, they make big mistakes or they achieve big gains. People with small desires, it's the same story. It all depends on that. The first thing is to build the vessel 10 stages, 10 sefirot, from Keter till Malchut, if you know Kabbalah. Okay, then comes the next stage, which is the days after Yom Kippur, which means from day 11 in the month of Libra, till the end together, so that's the 11th, the 12th, 13th, and 14th, and then 7 days of the holiday of Sukkot. This holiday is not mentioned in common American calendars, but that's part of the Jewish calendar. The holiday of Sukkot is very important because during these days, we work on the right column, which is the ability to feel God's grace and to activate it from our point of view. You know why is that so important? We were created to receive. But if you want to connect to the image of God inside you, you must share. And if because of the law of affinity, without sharing, you cannot connect to your true image. Therefore, I never met happy, selfish people. Did you? I don't think so. You can have selfish people that have a joy, momentary joy, but that's like, you know, you want to feel high, you get drunk. You feel high, but then you get the bye. And you know, in the beginning it starts with laughter and then it ends with crying and pain and misery, right? Without, that's when you're selfishly addicted to just fulfill your desires without any sharing. But when you say, if I want my life to be better, I'll make sure that other people's life will become better, you'll realize when you build that right column, that starts to balance the left column, and then you can start feel joy coming to your life and staying there. How do you put them together? That's Simchat Torah. That's the last day, the 22nd day, which is the central column. That's the union. It's like a wedding. Therefore, you know, in a Jewish wedding, there's 7 circles. In Ashkenazi weddings, that the groom is making around the bride. I'm sorry, the bride is making around the groom. We are the bride, we are the vessel, and we make 7 circles dancing with the Torahs for the day, the holiday of Simchat Torah, and by this we complete to merge the 3-column system. And now it can shine for the rest of the year. That will determine what kind of a year we're going to have. So how does it look like? If we look at this chart, it shows us the sequence of those days we just spoke about. So we start from the left. Okay, so you see day 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's one, we're talking about the dates in the Hebrew calendar of the month of Tishrei, Libra. So this is left column, this is the 10 days of repentance, or 10 days of Ah, Yamim Noraim. These are the days for cleansing the vessel, cleansing our soul. This is the time of Nesira, the sowing. And as we said before, we basically get from God the ability to go back to the initiation of humanity, the initiation of reality. Okay, and we rebuilt ourselves from all over again. If you had, can I start from the beginning? Yes. So Rosh Hashanah is day one and day two. Okay, and you see the first day is dealing with harsh judgments and the second day with lenient judgments. How do we fix them? We'll see soon. But there are 10 days, 10 sefirot. Yom Kippur is a day of atonement. That's when the purification process comes to its completion. That will be a study by itself. But on that day, we can reach to the highest point along the whole year and let the light of the Creator cleanse us so we can reveal the true, real free will. What does mean free will? When we are working out of fear, pain, lust, addiction, that's not free will. This is an addiction. This is when we feel remote from who we are. We need to have some enlightenment and purification to be able to go back to that moment of purity so we can really feel that we have free will. That is being achieved on Yom Kippur. After the end of Yom Kippur, then we have 5 days that the lights are starting to come of the right column from Bina. They come in 5 different stages, filling our souls to build us for the coming year. On the 15th day, which is a full moon, always, we start to get some more lights. That will be a class by itself also for 7 stages, 7 days. That's from day 15 till day 21. These are the 7 days of the holiday of Sukkot in the Hebrew calendar. During these 7 days, we receive the light of giving, the light of love, the light of caring and sharing, right column, to balance ourselves. We cleanse the left column the first 10 days. Now we're building the right column. Generosity, giving, loving. Without it, you can't really have a balanced life. So we get those lights, and there are 3 kinds of them. Surrounding light from Bina, surrounding light from Zeranpin, internal light from Zeranpin. It's all light of Chesed. On the 21st day, it's a Hoshana Abba, that's completed, and then completing, that is the Simchat Torah, that is the 22nd day, and that's when the process is over, and the year really starts, and we start reading from Genesis all over again. Okay. So, how do we prepare for that, for the birth of the new year? Remember, we are the newborn, but we also supposed to be the midwives of our new identity that can be revealed in the coming year. You know, thinking like this, you have a new chance to start from the beginning every year, gives you a lot of hope. Maybe this is why Israel is one of the biggest world centers for innovation and startups, because you are into it, that every year you have a new chance to start from Genesis, from the beginning. So it's like such a part of your state of mind that you always have a new chance to start all over again without any limitation. The concept is called by mistake, repentance. But that's not a Jewish concept. The Jewish concept is called Teshuvah. Teshuvah comes from the Hebrew word lashuv, to return. To return what? When we speak about Kabbalistic concepts of the tree of life, which means the flow of God's light to our limited, mundane, physical world, it comes down through a cascade of lights. Because if it would come directly, we can blow because the power is too much for us. So it comes through a system that is called the tree of life. One of the symbols of the tree of life is called the tetragrammaton, the four letters name of God that cannot be pronounced because it's too powerful for us. So you have the yud, and then the lights come down to the hey and the vav. The first three letters, the yud and the hey and the vav, they symbolize the part of the tree of life that is always enlightened. There's always flow over there, and it's ready to serve us and to charge us with abundance. However, our free will means that we have the control over the last part of the tree of life, the vessel, which is symbolized over here with the letter hey in yellow. The word teshuvah in Hebrew means teshuv, hey. The hey will return, which means by the law of affinity, our vessel, which is symbolized by the letter hey, we have total control over the vessel, over our vessel. We have basically, potentially, total control over our emotions, our thinking, because we can choose to think positive or negative. Okay? We have that ability. When we want to connect to the source of bliss, to the tree of life, we need to raise our consciousness. How do we do it? By the law of affinity? By generating love, patience, generosity, tolerance, all of that it is godly. That's by the law of affinity. When we do that, then the hay goes back, returns, teshuva, to the upper parts of the tree of life, and then the abundance starts to flow into our system. What do we need to do in order to do teshuvah? Remorse, confession, all of that stuff, by the way, it's not allowed on Rosh Hashanah. You have to be focused on who you want to be, not who you don't want to be anymore. If you think about who you don't want to be anymore, you have to think it in a way that I'm so excited because I have a chance to let go of that. As in the beginning of the year, which is always the eve of the night before, we pray in all the synagogues, and at the end of the prayer we say, Tachel, Tichle Shana Vekilolotea. A year with its curses will come to its ending, to its demise. Tachel shana v'birchoteha. A year with its blessings will be starting right now. Which means we just have to leave the curses behind. God, by the way, I'll give you a secret. He won't remember it to us. If we just let it stay behind, all the mistakes, all the negativities, he will forgive us if we forgive ourselves. How? If we do teshuvah. If we change our frequency, we become a new creature, a new human being that is full of love, positive awareness, generosity, caring, and wisdom. The Jewish law says, if you did that, you are a new creature on Rosh Hashanah. Whoever sinned in the previous year, that's not you anymore. That's only one condition. You really mean it. You will really see yourself as that new creation. But that depends on you, not on God. On your, how do you do that? So, The month before Rosh Hashanah is always the month of Virgo. And what do you know about Virgos? They are very picky. They're very precise. They are the best to proofread and to find faults and fix them. Okay? They are the greatest healers, designers. They can take something that is messed up and imbalanced and make it divine. We use those 30 days, 29 days of the month of Elul, of the month of Virgo, in order to audit ourselves and transform ourselves and reach back to the perfection that is our birth, our birthright from our initiation. Okay, so that's the month of Virgo. If you want to know more, you can go in our channel, in the Live Kabbalah TV channel. You can look for Virgo and you'll get more ideas about how to apply that for yourself. This is the time to make lists, meditate, achieve completions in relationships, to make lists of all the stuff that I want to let go and leave behind me, all the stuff that I want to achieve. But first of all, is about what is the kind of a human being that I would like to become, that I think it's a true me. How do you do that? Also, get feedback from friends. I'm talking about really true friends. What do they think about me? Through the feedback, I can find the truth inside me. This is very important, very powerful. And then comes the month of Libra. And as we said, the month of Tishrei is a month with abundance of light. It is a process of 22 days out of the whole month. It is a holiday in the Jewish calendar. It is a special given opportunity going back to the first day of the creation that is now being stretched into 22 days. Going back to the beginning and choosing who's the person I would like to be. Who's the person who was the true self of myself. So, what do we else do about in Rosh Hashanah? So, it says about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the great author of the Zohar. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai made a lot of effort to prepare the people who led the service and blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. That's in the Zohar, Parashat Vayikra, in Perusha Sulam, the Sulam, translation of Rabbi Ashlag, verse 302. Rabbi Shimon said that the whole world will be atoned by the prayer of that person, which means the consciousness of the person that does blow the shofar and pray and says it's only one person, which means, you know, I think today there's only so many people learning Kabbalah that do know the meditations, so we can count on them. We just have to do our job. And our job is to do the work, as we said before. And it says in the Zohar, verse 308, it's a war. And God says, give me the power. Nu oz le'elokim, give power to God. How do we give power to God? By the shofar, meditation, and blowing. Okay, so what do we do? So first of all, when we come in Rosh Hashanah, and we understand that the whole thing of Rosh Hashanah is reenacting the covenant humans have with God. That covenant was made with Abraham. It was sealed on Mount Sinai. And every year on Rosh Hashanah, we humans have to reenact it. What says the covenant? As we said before, we are here to make God our king. We can choose not to make him our king. Making him our king, follow his rules, being committed as a covenant, being committed to become those creatures who follow the rules of kindness, of love, appreciation, honesty, and integrity, and all the other biblical values We do it because we are, that's our mission, that's our appointment. We can't run away from it. Rosh Hashanah is the time to accept that kingdom, God's kingdom on earth. How would our year look like? Depends how much of that commitment we're going to accept ourselves on Rosh Hashanah. The shofar is there to help us to achieve that commitment. So that's why it says, come and see on that day of Rosh Hashanah, Shadin Nimtzaz Ba'olam, it's a judgment. There's a judgment in this world. Why? Because if we do not choose God's kingship, who will be our king? The dark side, Satan. Satan is not a power by itself. Satan is the void that is being generated when we do not choose God to be our king. That is a problem. Why? Satan is disturbing. You know, you have to understand that in Hebrew, the word Satan means the disturber. The moment we disconnect from the upper realms, from the tree of life, from the flow of the light of God, what's left? Void, darkness, pain. And that is becoming the disturber. It doesn't allow the flow of positivity and light and life, sustenance, everything that is good to flow freely. Now it determines that the coming year will be with disturbances. So how do we fix that? So the Zohar says that this is why we awaken with the shofar, the horn of a ram. Le'orer kol, to awaken a sound, a voice. And that voice is included of water, fire, and air. Can you see it? Water from the elements is the right column, the energy of loving kindness. Fire is the left column, negativity and selfishness, because fire cannot exist without taking. And air, which is the central column, the balance between water and air and fire. They become one in that day. And how do you see it in the shofar? The sound of the shofar has water. When you breathe out, there's water in your breathing. It's moist. You can see it on the shofar. You blow it too much, it becomes to have moisture on it. Fire is the heat that comes from within the person who blows, and the air, you're blowing air. The understanding is that the year is starting all over again, and our job is to fix basically whatever was flawed. Now, the blowing the shofar, they are divided into four different sounds. It's basically three. The first one in the blowing is the tekiah. That's a straight sound that is connecting us to the right column. We have hundreds of blows like this. Why? Because it's like, you know, you have when you have a electric system in your house and you have a panel, and in order to when you don't have proper electricity, you have a professional electrician, a certified electrician, opens the panel and he goes and he checks one connection after another to check what? The plus, the minus, and the resistant is in place and they're functioning. So when we go through the panel of our souls, that's how we fix it. So the tekiah is a simple, direct sound. Then we have to concentrate on what? Activating the right column, which is the program known as Abraham the Patriarch, loving kindness. Then comes Shevarim. It's a broken sound that's awakening us to reestablish the left column, Isaac. Then comes Teruah, which is another aspect of the left column, Malchut, That is the what? That's a stuttered sound. And then it's being sealed with another tequila, like the first one. But now it comes to put the right and the left together. Okay, the male and the female together. Adam and Eve together. So now they can choose to unite. That's called love, harmony, and unity. But that's out of choice. That's why when Adam and Eve were created as one, there's no free will over here. Okay? But there's no happiness over here. What's the happiness? That you choose to unite. You choose to unite the sharing and the receiving all as one. So it sounds like this. That repeats itself 400 times every day of Rosh Hashanah in the morning prayers. So, even if you're not Jewish, you can pray for that at your home, or you go to a synagogue, or you can pray for it wherever you are, and just meditate that to join to that one soul prayer. So the whole of humanity will basically, with the blowing the shofar, will make God our king for the coming year. So there will be less chaos, less aggravation, less hatred, less greed, and therefore less wars and, you know, unneeded hurt and pain and misery. And humanity can really join together to create heaven on earth, which is our destiny. Now, in the synagogue, there are four rounds of blowing the shofar. The first one is to correct idol worshiping. What is idol worshiping? Any kind of losing our control to addictions. Any kind of addiction, because anger is also idol worshiping. The second round is incest. Any kind of lust that overcome us, that could be for food, you know, there's so many. Third is bloodshed, which means any kind of violence, physical, mental, verbal. And the fourth one is Lashon Hara, which means bad-mouthing other people, which is the worst of them all. So, you know, the big understanding is, if you go to the synagogue, so you understand why there are four sessions of blowing the shofar, and all of them are divided into the same sets of sounds as we spoke about before. There's much more of it, but that's shortly. You can find more lectures about it in our channel, Live Kabbalah TV, but that are more detailed, and you can even find more detailed explanation on our site, livekabbalah.org. But this is the basic that you need to start with. Shana Tova, an amazing, happy, and sweet year to all of us. Thank you so much.
Shana Tova.
Shana Tova.